What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Central Virginia Sport Performance Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jay DeMayo. Today, I get to sit down and we're going to talk training hoopers, and specifically starting with the warm-up and the preparation of basketball players with David Dietz. David, thanks for being with us today, man.
Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to dive into a little bit of performance and basketball. And share with everybody things that, you know, I've seen and done over the years.
Yeah, man, really excited to have you here. But before we get too far into this, for the half of a human who doesn't know who David Dietz is, let's let them know, who are you and how did you get out to Tulsa?
Yeah, so my title is Assistant AD for Athletic Performance at the University of Tulsa. I oversee men's and women's basketball, men's and women's tennis, and women's golf out of my facility with two other performance coaches and a nutritionist. I'm from the state of Oklahoma originally, so I was able to move back here 6 years ago, which has been really good for my family. I have two daughters, and one's going to be a junior in high school, and the other one's a seventh grader. And so being able to move back closer to them was a no-brainer, one. And then two, you know, growing up in Oklahoma, you knew Tulsa basketball. Even me being from the west side of the state, Tulsa basketball has always had a great tradition and history. And so being able to come back and work with a program at a private university like that was something that I wanted to do. And so through the years, I think I started this in, you know, 1998, just got through with spring ball in college, just got through taking anatomy class. Me, some of my teammates went down to Texas and we ran what was called the athletes course back then. The high school coaches could not even call their student athletes in the state of Texas back at this time. And so we would come in and go to these schools and run 6 weeks of speed and strength camps. And I just got through taking anatomy and ran those things for the summer. And I was like, this is what I want to do. And so from there, graduated from college, got a GA job at Oklahoma State. After 8 months, I'm thrown in the fire. I'm the head strength coach at Northwestern State in Natchitoches, Louisiana, in the Southland. And from there, went to TCU and then back to Oklahoma State. And back then, I mean, when we first got into this deal, I mean, it was every sport. When I was at Northwestern State, I didn't even have a GA. I had every sport. You know, I'd get up, I'd have men's basketball at 6 in the morning and preseason. And the only time I could get women's basketball together was like 8 to 10 at night. And then all the other sports in between. And then same thing, go to TCU back then. It's 2002. I mean, there's three of us for the whole athletic department. So you're working multiple sports, multiple teams, and everybody's doing football back then. And then go back to Oklahoma State and then had the opportunity to join Mike Anderson at the University of Missouri in 06 and go into just basketball. Played basketball growing up all the way through and really liked how I feel like with a basketball team, one, you get closer with them because there's less of them. And two, you can actually train them for the game and train them for the sport instead of numbers. And so I really enjoyed that aspect of it, trying to train guys to be available instead of just training. And so since then, I've pretty much been basketball only. Went to Arkansas with Mike Anderson, took a year off, worked at a high school as rehab coordinator and strength and conditioning coach, and then joined Ben Howland at Mississippi State, and then was fortunate enough to come back to the state of Oklahoma to Tulsa 6 years ago. Just finished my 6th year, so that's kind of my journey and how I got to where I am now.
Coach Holland is one of my favorite people ever in college basketball.
Oh, he's awesome. He was so good to me.
I was really fortunate in the time after UCLA when he was kind of nomadically going around the country. He came here and got to watch practice and like actually was like asking questions about lift and to have a head coach who had been to multiple Final Fours, who coached Russell Westbrook and Kevin Love. And we don't even need to get into the laundry list of Big East superstars that he coached at Pittsburgh. To show up early for practice and show interest in the warm-up that we were doing really blew my mind. And that's something that I think that when your name comes up, the preparation for the preparation, is something that people sort of go hand in foot with David Dietz. So let's talk about that. First of all, what's your thought process when you're putting these things together? And how has it been brought to have such high regard in what you're doing for these young people?
Yes, warm-ups to me is a way that I feel with the way that the basketball training and the amount of time we got get with them have shifted. You know, when we first started in this deal, we had all 8 hours. So we could, we could lift in the summer, do speed agility every single day, right? And that was it. They might play some pickup later. Well, all of a sudden they took 2 hours away from us. Stick it still stood stuff. Then all of a sudden took 2 more hours away from us. So now we're at 4 and 4, right? So now we got to get all these lifts in and we got to be able to still do some sort of speed training, reaction, agility, whatever that might be. How do we have time to do all this whenever we have to condition going into preseason and do all these things? So for me, I think warmups are so important, and I never do the same one once a week. Sometimes in the weight room, twice a week. On the court, sometimes might not do the same one for over a month. And we're going to do the same patterns, but they're going to be different ways of doing them. And to me, whenever we start back in September or end of August, all the way through, March, that's the most consistent time we get with them. And so for me, I use that time every day that I have with them and the time I have with them to group patterns. And so that's why we never do the same one ever consecutive days in a row, multiple days in a row. I feel like one, it makes them become a better athlete. Two, I think it helps with reduction of injury. Three, they have to be locked in for the warm-up for that day because it's going to be something different every time. And so they're just not out there going through the motions. They're actually having to listen to what's going on, maybe follow the guy in front of them, be the leader, depending on what the warm-up is. And so I feel like I'm able to hit a lot of different speed, reaction, acceleration, deacceleration within my warmups every day. And like I said, I think that it definitely helps with them to be, as soon as coach starts practice, they're ready to go. It's not like they just went through a warm up and they're just going through the motion and now it's going to take 5 to 10 minutes to get them actually going into practice that they actually get going. And so I think that helps with the start of practice and the way that we can get them ready and prepared for that practice. Now, I will do the same warm up in season the day before a game and the day of the game. So whether that be the day before, shoot around warm up's going to be different than the day before warm up, and then the game day warm up is going to be different than what we did at shoot around. But those are the consistent ones in season that I do. But the other days is always going to be a mixture. Like it could be on arcs some days, it could be on circles some days, it could be on squares, it could be on tees, it could be on triangles, it could be, you know, using the stadium, you know, whatever it might be, hoops, you know, doing different sprint turn and slides, whatever the pattern might be. A lot of times the locomotive movements are going to be leading up to whatever the speed or reaction drill is that day. The patterns, even though they're on different planes and they're on different, you know, might be patterns, the locomotive ones are going to be pretty much going to be the same movements, but just different ways of doing them.
I dig it. I think that there's a lot to be said for that. In a couple things. One, it takes a lot of creativity to be able to do the same thing differently for as many practices as we have to go to. Like, I think that people sit there and they think, oh, you know, it's great, you know, having one team or a couple teams because you get to go to practice. Yeah, going to practice is great until you've been at the same place for like 10, 15 years. And all of a sudden, going to practice, I could tell you, I could right now write out what our first 12 individual workouts are. Probably I could do it before our podcast is done because we've seen it all. So I think that there's a lot of value in keeping at least that part unique, fresh, different. As a variable, if you may. But while doing that, is there ever the thought process of, while novelty can increase their ability to produce these actions in the multiple chaotic planes that is basketball, is there ever the worry that because they're not doing the same thing, air quotes, hashtag, whichever, depending on how old people are, they could use that, like that they don't get the repetitions, so they may not learn the basic skills?
Well, and that's that, you know, that's what I, you know, I think that's the one thing that we do the basic skills over and over again every day. It's just a different way of doing them. And, you know, like we're going to always, you know, if it's a day where we haven't lifted, we're always going to start with a movement prep. And it's going to be the same movement prep, but I can do it on a circle. I can do heel toe walks, knee hugs, ankle tugs around the circles, right? Using the court lines. I can go into, you know, skips around it, skips behind, skips in front, facing away from the circle, skips in, you know, behind, facing in, sliding, you know, ham kicks around there, defensive slides. I can do all the same movements. And so we get the same movements over and over again. And every single day. Now, if we've already lifted and we're going into practice, we won't do the movement prep because we've already primed them in the workout, and we'll get out there and we'll line it up, and then we'll break off into whatever we're doing that day, and go right into our dynamic and whatever the drill is, whether it be, you know, on a square, a triangle, a T, an L, hoops, or whatever it might be, we'll just go right into it. So I usually take 10 minutes on the days that we haven't done anything. A day before a game is going to be a little bit longer. I'll take about 12 minutes to warm up. But I think because we do the same movement patterns over and over again, but I think the variety of doing it on different planes is what helps reduce injury.
When you say reduce injury, are we talking like the foot ankle complex? Or are we talking overall?
I'm talking foot ankle. I'm talking soft tissue. You know, things that we can control. We can't control everything. We all know that. But what can we do to try to minimize it is what I'm looking at and looking for. And I feel like when I started going to this model, that I felt like those numbers, those percentages went down of minutes missed to practice, games, lifting, year round. And so that's what I mean when I say reduce the chance of something happening. Now, you know, I think I'm like everybody in our field, right? Like when something does happen to an athlete, we feel like it's our fault. What could I have done different? What could I do better? What am I going to do to help get this student athlete back even better than what they were before? Because I must have missed something, you know, before it happened. And that's the way I look at things through that lens.
Yeah, man, I dig that a lot. And I think that one thing that we all can be better at, and when I say we all, I definitely mean me, is when we look at these movements, right? We look at different movements as multiplanar, but making these simple adjustments, right? Whether it be instead of going straight ahead, as simple as going back, or as simple as doing it sideways, or as simple as, like you said, doing them in a circle or in a T or in an L or whatever it may be, changing the direction and the angle and the direction you're going into it, the direction you're coming out of it, the direction that you're going through it, stresses the foot ankle complex in a different pattern, in a different angle, that when we say the goal is injury reduction, we need to make sure that they're able to handle chaotic things, but in a controlled environment to begin with, while putting them in different situations where their body has experienced some of these things. And I think that that's really a great way to do it.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing that you really hit on there is that the foot and ankle complex. So we never come in the room with our shoes on. We are going to go through our whole warm up in the performance center for every lift without any shoes on. And that's going to go through, you know, all the different, you know, jump matrices we do, whatever we might do, whatever jump pattern we have after whatever, you know, mobility warm up that we're doing that day. It's all going to be without our shoes on. And we're going to go through our prehab without those on. There's a lot of times in season that we won't ever even put our shoes on the whole time because we're in them so much on the court that, you know, we're trying to, you know, get that ground up approach, right? And for that foot and ankle. And, you know, and I think that by doing that, I think that helps with those types of things when you talk about you know, the getting the blood flow, getting the foot to reset, getting, you know, with getting the talus and the calcaneus to set right, you know, whether that be using a tri stretch, you know, as part of the warm up or whatever that may be. I think that, like you said, like being able to get them in and out as many positions that I can is going to help if something does happen. It's not going to totally take away from everything that's going to happen, but I feel like the more times I can get them in and out of different positions and something does happen and they're used to being in and out of that position from the ground up, right? That knee's going to go valgus, right? So we're going to do a lot of stuff in the transverse plane, right? Bam, getting in and out of that position. Now, if something does happen, now I feel like we have a greater chance of reducing what could have been even more costly time away, being able to reduce that time. Another thing that we do here at the University of Tulsa, and I don't have them tape their ankles. Coach came to me when he first got here, and he goes, "What's your method behind this?" And I said, "Coach," I said, "if we're going to lock that one up, the one above it is going to be in jeopardy. And for me and for you, we can get a guy that sprains his ankle back a lot quicker than we can that next joint." And he was like, and I was like, "What was that? What's that next joint, coach?" And he's like, "The knee." I said, "Yeah, they're probably going to be done for the year." And he was like, okay, whatever you want. And so we do not tape ankles unless they want them taped. That's the only time we'll do it, is if they want them to have it done. But I just feel like when you're talking about your foot and ankle complex, when you start locking that thing up, that chain reaction, you know, where's it going to go?
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think, though, kind of going back to the beginning of what you were just talking about there, I'm a huge fan of them training barefoot. We did that. We have been doing that for a very long time, to the point that we actually bought Vibrams for the guys back in the day. The smell and the challenges at times with people with larger feet to put them on moved us back to just training in socks. But yeah, dude, like I think that is the lowest hanging fruit of all the low hanging fruit when we talk about the big toe, the foot, the ankle, like getting them out of shoes and just walking and, you know, doing as much of the workout is that is safe as possible without their sneakers on is it really is something that is just so simple that people overlook, I think, because it's so simple and because it's not sexy, but it has so much ROI for so many. I mean, even just strength with your feet on the ground. Like we've seen guys, the guys who squat or deadlift or press in socks instead of sneakers, their numbers improve exponentially faster. There's got to be something to it.
Oh, there definitely is. I mean, I always say, I mean, if you took your hand, right, and you just pull your fingers together, you know, as far as together as you can, that's what our feet look like in shoes. But if you rest your hand naturally, that's the way that our foot should look, but it does not, because we are in shoes so much. And when you know this from working with basketball so much, how many hours we spend on the court in those shoes that are just pulling, you know, everything and just smashing everything together. And I feel like, you know, being able to, you know, use rock mats and have them walk out every day as soon as they walk in the door to, you know, reset those joints in there, reset those bones and get that blood flowing and get those muscles to relax. I think, like you said, I think at the end of the time, that return on investment, even though it's something small, and like you said, it's not sexy, you know, but I think your return on investment, like you said, is so great just by 10 minutes a day, 15 minutes a day, you know, into, like I said, and you said, you know, there'll be times we'll go the whole training session without having them on. And like you said, the gains that you get without having them on because you're building that strength from the ground up.
Yeah. And there's just so much just simple. Again, we talk about low hanging fruit, right? But like, even when we do that, it's the sexy things. It's like, oh, well, we need to talk about sleep and nutrition and hydration. But like, dude, getting them out of their shoes and just teaching them to bounce a little bit and bend a little bit and squat a little bit and step a little bit. Like, there's so much to it. And again, going full circle back to what, you know, you were talking about with the warm up, you can stress that foot ankle complex in more planes. I don't know if that's the right term, but I think you're going to understand what I'm saying. You can stretch it and mobilize it and stress it in more planes because the shoe is not there holding it than you can in the shoe, meaning more things move. More things have to be stable when they're supposed to be stable and mobile when they're supposed to be mobile. So you're getting things to function better from the big toe all the way up, which is what we say we want, but we won't take their shoes off.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And I think what, you know, you just said is is spot on. You know, you're talking about getting extension all the way through the toes and being able to get that foot to invert and evert, you know, and move the way that it's supposed to. You know, it's you're spot on with that. And it's like you said, it's something that, you know, that doesn't take a lot of time, you know, to take a shoe off and put it back on. Like at the end of the day, we're spending, you know, 30 seconds getting shoes on after they, you know, we went through everything until it's time to put their shoes on. We're going to waste 30 seconds for them to put their shoes on. That's not that long, you know. But like you said, the return on investment by doing that and by putting them in those positions and then you put the shoe on them, I think it allows them to even create more force in the different planes of getting that foot and ankle complex in and out of positions.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And it's something that we get to see all the time. And I think that that's a great example of, you know, what you started talking about early on. And I'd kind of like you to run down this rabbit hole here a little bit, if you could, Coach, where you said train them for the sport instead of the numbers. That's a pretty great old statement where a lot of people may say, well, the numbers are important because it proves again, air quotes, hashtag, whatever, our value. So what do you mean by that? Where did that thought process come from? What do you mean by that? And could you give an example of what you're describing there?
So for me, if I'm trying to chase numbers and I'm loading people all the time, I feel like within the sport of basketball, travel, games, practices, if I'm always trying to chase numbers, and there's times that you know, you're going to get numbers, but if I'm trying to do it consistently and all the time, and I'm not hitting the, doing the barefoot stuff, doing the different warm-ups, doing the mobility, doing, you know, the corrective exercises, doing the, you know, lifting that, you know, how we do things, then if I'm just trying to worry about a bench, a squat, and a, you know, whatever else, if you're an Olympic lifting person, a clean, if I'm trying to always just chase those numbers, then I feel like I'm missing a big part, not doing my vertical core stuff. I'm not doing my other stuff. I feel like us as performance coaches, strength coaches, they're going to get stronger within our programs. But if I'm solely just trying to get them just stronger on bench, squat, and clean, then I'm not taking the holistic approach to a training. And I feel like that does not transfer to the game of basketball. I feel like taking the holistic approach to things gives you more transferability to the court, you know, doing the mobility, you know, the extra mobility, getting in the stretch cages, doing all these things. If all I care about is a bench, squat, and a clean, then I'm not doing all the other with that. And I feel like the transferability is not going to be there. And I feel like the reduce, you don't get the reduction of injuries if you're not able to hit that whole holistic approach to training.
Yeah, man, I couldn't agree more. I think that's a great way to describe it.
And, you know, and like I said, there's times of the year where we're going to load them, right? And different times, and people have different philosophies, I have times that I'm going to load them, and there's times I'm not going to load them, and there's times I'm going to load them in different ways that might not produce a higher bench press or a higher hang clean or a higher squat, but I'm still stressing them and I'm still getting, you know, the strength that I need for them to be good at the game they play. It's basketball.
No doubt. Because as fun as we'd all have, those of us in this vocation, if they did walk out and they brought a power rack out at the end of the game and said, eh, close enough, whoever benches most wins, we'll never see it, unfortunately.
No.
But no, David, man, this has been a great half hour. I really appreciate you taking the time with us, man. Before we get you out of here, though, where can people stay in touch with you? Where can they find you on the socials and all that?
On Twitter, I'm at Coach Dietz. And then on Instagram, it's at Coach Dietz 23.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Well, listen, Coach, really appreciate your time, man. Thank you so much. And we'll be in touch real soon, brother.
Coach DeMayo, I appreciate you. Thanks for all you do to forward our profession.
I appreciate that, Coach. Thank you so much. And as always, thank you for everything y'all do for us here at Central Virginia Sport Performance. We'll be back next week with another awesome guest. We'll see you then.